It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, all of those places. A lot of things going on. You can listen to the show, of course, live, Joy 620, every Tuesday afternoon at 5. Also, you can find the podcast at our website, investinghope.com, iTunes, TuneIn app, all the places, wherever podcasts are found, you can find this show. So today what I want to do is talk about dignity and what that means. So we're going to look at an article that a good friend of mine, Dan Darling, wrote for the USA Today, talking about human dignity and the pro-life movement. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about volunteering. And so at Hope Resource Center right now, we are doing volunteer training this week. And it's great to see people come out, learn more about what we're doing at Hope, and also being willing to assist, whether that be with baby showers, mentoring, or whatever it is we need. And so that training is going on. I'll talk about that as well. Also, we have some events coming up, and I want to touch on those as well. We have a 5K, a golf tournament very soon, and then just a lot of things going on. We are in fall already. We have Battle of the Bottles coming up between Grace and CAK. A lot of things happening. It's hard to believe that fall is here. I took my kids to school this morning to start. So my oldest is in second grade. The second child started kindergarten today. It's hard to believe that she is in kindergarten. And then we have two others that are waiting. So in 2 years, another one will start. And then two more years, another one will start school. And so we have a second grader and kindergartner. And from the reports that I've gotten today from my wife, the kids had a good day and are happy and probably tired, and so I'll get home and then it'll be time for bed really soon for them. So but excited about that, and the fall is here, and so a lot of great things happen. But I want to start today with this article from Daniel Darling. He is vice president of communications with ERLC, Ethics Religious Liberty Commission, and he wrote an article, and he's got a book that is out I think for pre-order right now about human dignity. But this article is discusses why it is important to have a robust pro-life ethic. And if you've listened to this show at all, you've heard me talk about a robust pro-life ethic. You've heard Dan Darling has been on this show talking about it. Russell Moore has been talking about it on this show. Multiple folks have come on and talked about our stance when it comes to life and what it should include. But I wanted to share this article with you because I do think it's important and thoughtful piece by Dan Darling. So I'll just start now. Perhaps it was when my parents picked me up early from kindergarten and we drove to a nondescript white building in Wheaton, Illinois, and we picked up my baby brother from the adoption agency. Tim was only a few weeks old. He was weak and vulnerable, and I felt like I was there to be his protector. I wouldn't let anything happen to him. Or maybe it was when I overheard my mother crying after suffering yet another miscarriage. After having me, my parents went through the premature deaths of 7 babies. I never considered once that these lives were unimportant or disposable. I watched my mother and father mourn the loss of each one. Darling continues, or it could be that my pro-life convictions were shaped as I began to understand the complexity of human life and the miracle of conception, or as I began to read passages from the Bible, like Psalm 139, where King David describes the divine way in which his life and every human life is known and formed by God in the womb. I've only become more pro-life as I've gotten older. As I saw the first grainy shadows of each of my 4 children on the ultrasound machine, as I watched my heroic wife give birth, as I continue to watch each of my children grow. And he continues, my view of humanity, of the preciousness of life, were first formed by recognizing the dignity of society's most vulnerable. It was the abortion issue that first pushed me into politics, both in advocacy and the championing of candidates who stood on the side of life. Though I've had many discussions with sincere pro-choice advocates and sympathized with the plight of at-risk women, often victims of a cruelly exploitative world, I'm not convinced that abortion, which snuffs out the life of a beating heart, is a moral good. And I'm convinced that an industry that profits off the deaths of unborn babies is something that we will one day look back on as a stain on the American experiment. This is why I'm cautiously optimistic about the gains of the pro-life movement, from state-level restrictions to the possibility of a reliable conservative majority in the Supreme Court with the appointment and presumptive confirmation of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, which we've discussed here as well. Perhaps one day we will see in our society a genuine culture of life. But as much as the pro-life movement has to celebrate, we should stop and consider that even if Roe v. Wade was overturned, and even if by some miraculous nationwide movement abortion was made illegal in all 50 states, our work as advocates for the vulnerable would not be over. It would have only just begun. For the strength of the pro-life argument is not that it has opposed the grisly practice of abortion, but that it made arguments in the public square of the humanity of those who possess the least amount of power. Pro-lifers persistently point every day to that child in the womb and declare that he or she is human, not a clump of cells. This is an argument that, even were abortion illegal, still pushes against the injustices of the modern world. All around us, there are vulnerable people too easily discarded as inconvenient by the powerful. Immigrant babies at the border are ripped from their mothers. Elderly populations often sit uncared for in appalling living conditions. Minorities continue to endure subtle injustices, the bitter residue of slavery and Jim Crow. The pro-life movement has the moral vocabulary an unjust world needs, but we must not merely see ourselves as the anti-abortion movement, though we are that. We must see ourselves as human dignity movement, committed to the idea that every human being has intrinsic value. A new beginning for the pro-life movement is if we could just imagine if the end of Roe were not the end of our advocacy, but the beginning. What if we saw ourselves not merely as conservatives or anti-abortion activists, but as people who are always, everywhere, advocating for policies that help the most vulnerable flourish? Imagine a new kind of politics where the ethic of human dignity disrupted our political categories, uniting those who see the humanity of the unborn with those who see the humanity of the immigrant, the disabled, the infirm, and the elderly. Imagine a new era of civility where we saw dignity even in our fiercest opponents and worked with whoever is willing to end injustices against the innocent. This kind of moral movement seems impossible only if we remain stubbornly committed to our petty tribalism. But if we would reimagine ourselves as a movement for dignity, the pro-life movement will not merely have a legacy of persistently, courageously, and eloquently arguing on behalf of the unborn, but as the people who opposed assaults on humanity, wherever it is found. And so that is an article that I would highly recommend you reading. And I understand that anytime we talk about the pro-life movement being anything more than just anti-abortion, some people hit back and say, leave that for someone else. The pro-life movement is supposed to be about abortion. That's it. Well, I would say I am pro-life because of Jesus. And so my pro-lifeness doesn't stop at the womb. I'm certainly anti-abortion. There is no hiding that. Go read some of the things that I've written. Go listen to some of the speeches that I've given. Listen to these shows that I do every single week. It is clear I am anti-abortion. But it is also clear that we need to be consistent in our pro-life stance. And so if we are going to be consistent in our pro-life stance, then we are going to stand for the vulnerable in all cases. And I understand also that some folks are going to hear this and go, well, wait, now you're talking about things that go against my politics. It's okay if you talk about being against abortion because that lines up with my politics. But as soon as you start talking about immigrants, well, now that's going to make me uncomfortable. Well, folks, the work of gospel people is an uncomfortable work. And so we have to be the ones that are giving voice for those that don't have them. Certainly that includes the unborn. Certainly that includes that mom that is being mistreated, that is being coerced, that is being manipulated by a number of different folks who's trying to decide on what she should do with her pregnancy. Absolutely, it includes that. It also includes immigrant families. It also includes refugees. And so how do we juggle this as a movement? How do we juggle this as Christians? And I understand that some folks are going to say, well, we can't possibly focus on all of those things. If we focus on all of those things, then nothing will get done. And so let's focus on abortion now. Once we see Roe v. Wade overturned, then we'll shift and focus to something else. But as gospel people, are we not supposed to focus on the mission at hand and stand for the vulnerable? And so we're willing to have these conversations with each other. Again, it's not questioning your pro-lifeness. One thing that encourages me is that pro-lifers are willing to have these conversations because the pro-choicers aren't having it. They're not even willing to say that what Kermit Gosnell did in Philly, in Philadelphia, is wrong. They're not even willing to admit that there are some abortion clinics out there that are doing work that is shoddy and terrible, and they have no business doing the work that they're doing. They're not willing to look in the mirror and say, we have some things we need to correct. No, but we must be better than that. We must look in the mirror and say, there are things we need to correct. There is work still to be done. My pro-lifeness certainly includes the womb, but it certainly doesn't stop there. And so as we talk about dignity, as we talk about image bearers, as we talk about those that we come in contact with, again, we are not motivated because of a policy. We are not motivated because of a Supreme Court pick. We are not motivated because of a vote. If we are gospel people, we are motivated by the Creator of the universe. We are motivated by the Savior of our souls, by the one that willingly went to the cross, willingly faced death, willingly faced persecution, willingly had people spit on him and mock him and say terrible, terrible things and do terrible, terrible things to him and his family. Why? For the vulnerable. Who is the vulnerable? When our Jesus is on the cross, we are the vulnerable. And so if our God was willing to do that, to give everything up, to become a man, being fully God, fully man, walking the earth, taking on the pain that we frankly deserved, if he is willing to go to the cross for the vulnerable, the model's been laid out for the Christian. And so when Dan Darling talks about human dignity, including the unborn, but also including the immigrant, including the unborn, but also including that mom, including the unborn, but also including the minorities that are dealing with persecution and terrible situations, dealing with the unborn, but also dealing with the refugee. These things may make people uncomfortable. But in case you haven't noticed, being a Christian is going to do that. You know, many say that what Jesus did turned the world upside down. The reality is, when Jesus entered in to the scene, he was here to turn the world right side up. And boy, do we long for that day. We'll be back.
We were hungry, we were thirsty, with nothing left to give. Oh, the shape that we were in. And just when all hope seemed lost, love opened the door for us. He
said, so as we talk about human dignity and we talk about a robust pro-life ethic, we have to have this dialogue with ourselves, not just with our friends and neighbors and family and all that, but we have to have this dialogue with ourselves. Right? So when someone says, we should stand for the vulnerable, and that should include the unborn, but we should also care about what's happening to immigrant families, whether they're legal or not, crossing the border. We should also care about what's happening to refugees. And when I say that from a personal perspective. We should care about it, not from what Washington has to do. Not from what political leaders and policy has to do, but what What are we as Christians? And now I'm talking to Christians. What are we as Christians doing when we hear about these things? And if the first thing that rises up in your heart is politically motivated, then can I just, in a very sincere way, say, be careful. There's work to be done in our hearts. And I'm saying this from a perspective that I was a political science major. I might have been the oldest man in college at 17 years old because I was an old man. And I still am an old man. And I'd much rather hang out with old dudes and hear old stories and all of that. And so what that translated to in college was no friends, because I wanted to debate and I wanted to prove people, that tell people they were wrong, and I wanted to fuss and argue and do all of these things. I was the opposite of what one may call a social justice warrior in today's terms on a college campus. I enjoyed interacting with folks that would have been labeled that. But I didn't care about their soul. I didn't care about their eternity. I cared about their vote. And folks, that mindset. Now, we trust that God is doing the saving, but we also trust that God is using his people to move the gospel. And so even though I probably became a stumbling block for many, I trust that God's going to move regardless. But you see, my motivations were that of voting, not of eternity. That doesn't mean we're not engaged in the process. We're engaged in the process. Again, go read something that I wrote. Go listen to these shows from the past. I'm very much engaged in the political process, and you should be. But we also must be a people that care about others. Yeah, I have this conversation constantly with my children of, who do we put first? Ourselves or the others around us? I'm always having this conversation with my son. Who do we put first? Do you put your sisters before you? Do you let them walk in front of you? Do you let them get in the car first? Do you let them walk through the door first? Or is it all about you and you rush in front of them? Now, that's a very minor thing. But those things play out as we become adults as well. And so as adults, who are we thinking about? Others or ourselves and our political motivations? And are we allowing our tribalism, as Dan Darling talked about in the article in USA Today, are we always looking for that political argument and not willing to have a conversation with someone that may disagree with us? You know, we always tout that this country is the greatest country because of the rights and the freedoms that we have. And then we get so angry when someone has a opposing view. I don't agree with people that believe abortion is wrong, and I would tell them that to their face. But they're not, I don't hate them. I care about their soul. They still bear the image of our God, whether they want to recognize that or not. And so what is our motivation behind our everyday life? What is the motivation behind the pro-life movement? Now, there are secular people that stand with us in the pro-life movement, and they are anti-abortion. They're motivated because they believe that it's a life and life should be preserved. Now they don't have a Christian or a biblical foundation for that. And I pray that they would get there. But in the folks that I'm talking to weekly on this show, the vast majority, if not all, would claim to be Christian. And so our motivation for being pro-life is gospel-driven, not political-driven, not Washington-driven, not Nashville or the state capital-driven. Our motivation is that we believe God created life. that He gave us that gift. And we should protect that gift. Not just in the womb, but in a number of other ways. And so are we standing for the vulnerable? Do we believe that the refugees we're standing for? Do we believe that our pro-lifeness is truly a gospel issue and it's going to drive us? That doesn't mean we don't also vote in a pro-life way. We certainly do. And I would encourage you to do that. But we shouldn't be getting up every morning and going, what's my political mood today? Who can I convince today to vote a certain way? Instead, we should be getting up in the morning and saying, okay, God's going to put some people in my path today. What's that going to look like? Am I going to put the others in front of me today? Am I going to care about people today, or I'm going to focus on me and that's it, and it's all about me and what makes me happy? And I've said it before, but the do what makes you happy mindset is the most damning mindset. Why? Because that puts you in front of everyone else. That's anti-gospel. Do what makes you happy is anti-gospel. And I know there's moms listening to this right now going, hold on, I tell my kids all the time, do what makes you happy. Well, what if what makes them happy is harming someone else? That doesn't make sense. It just means the gospel calls us to not simply do what makes us happy, but it's a call to die to self. That's why the Christian message is so different. That's why the gospel message is such good news. But it's why it also doesn't make sense to a lot of secular people. Wait, you're God, you're King, the Savior of the universe. Put Himself on a cross for you? That's your gospel. Your God is willing to get down and wash the feet of Judas, the one that gave Him over to the authorities. That's the news that you have. Your God who knows all the cattle on the hills, who knows everything, still went to the cross, took the beatings, took the persecution, told His disciples, His men, to stand down when they came to arrest Him. Yeah, that's our God. And so the model is in place. So are we taking that model and running with it, or are we polluting that model and making it work for us so that we can do what makes us happy? There's work to do, but praise God, a lot of great work is happening and a lot of good things are happening inside the pro-life movement. We'll talk more when we come back. I fully know in love by you, you won't let go, no matter what I do. And it's not one or the other, it's our truth and ridiculous grace to be known, fully known and loved by you. I'm fully known and loved by you. So as we continue the discussion on human dignity and in our pro-lifeness and our robust pro-life ethic, we have to look at this broadly, but also go, okay, well, practically, what does that mean? And I never want to come on and talk about these things and then not give you any kind of practical, like, well, how, okay, I need to look in the mirror. I need to have this inner dialogue about my pro-life stance. And it needs to be, of course, against abortion, but also it needs to be this and it needs to be that. What can I do? Where can I begin? And what I would say is, there's a great book by Kevin DeYoung, and it's called Do Something. And so the premise of the book, and I, again, look it up, Kevin DeYoung, I think it's called Just Do Something or Do Something, but a very good book. And as the whole point is, at times, we over-spiritualize things. And it's not to mean that we shouldn't spiritualize things, but at times we spend so much time going, well, I don't know what God wants me to do, and there's two doors open, and I don't know which door to go through, and if I go through that door, it could be the wrong door, and so instead I'll just sit here and not go through any doors, and I'll just sit on my couch, and everything will be fine. Well, no, that's not what we need to do. What Kevin DeYoung rightly says, and what Scripture tells us, is we should do something. Because if you have an amazing job opportunity, and you're trying to figure out, is this the Lord's plan? You can't go to the Bible and go, okay, I have this great job opportunity at such and such place. Tell me what I need to do. Well, the Bible's not going to specifically say, hey, Linda, you should take this job at Regal. Well, no, it's not going to say that. And so what we have to do is look for moments and do something. And so Christianity is active. It's not just reactive. It is being proactive. So we get up every day and we choose love. We get up every day and say, today is not going to just be about me. Now, granted, some of it's going to be about you. You should brush your teeth. That's about you and the people around you. That's just being nice. But if you have a spouse, it's also choosing, I'm going to love them today. Even if today they may be a little unlovable and I don't want to be around them, but I'm going to choose to love them. With my kids, I'm going to choose to love my kids today. Even when they are pushing all the buttons and they're driving me over the edge, I'm going to choose to love them. And so again, we're being proactive. In the same way with our coworkers, with neighbors, with all of those things, are we putting others first? That begins our pro-life stance, not just a pro-life stance. It begins our gospel stance, because that is who we are as Christians, as God's people, as image bearers. And I know that at times I sound like a broken record, but if we would intentionally see everyone we come in contact with as those that bear the image of our Creator, I promise you, your interaction with them would be much different. You can't control how they interact with you, but you can certainly control how you interact with them. And this is a struggle. If somebody comes up to me and they're questioning, maybe they're on the other side, maybe they would say they're pro-choice, and they don't agree with my stance, they don't agree with the work of pregnancy centers. You don't think I want to immediately jump and go back to my old days and debate and argue and fuss and do all of that to try to win some kind of argument? Sure I do. And at times that's needed, again, in a Christian manner, but it's needed. You need to counter what they're saying. But there's going to be moments also where we need to just walk away. There's going to be moments where we say, I'd love to just sit down and hear your perspective. And hear someone else's perspective. Another practical way is being involved in the local church. Are you involved? Are you leading? Are you volunteering in an area? Are you helping in the kids ministry? Are you helping in the youth ministry? Are you a greeter? Are you helping in the parking lot? Are you taking up? Are you one of a deacon or an elder? Are you one of the ushers? Whatever it is, wherever you go, are you being involved? And then not just volunteering at the local church, but are you volunteering in areas that are going to stretch you? Maybe areas that are going to make you uncomfortable. Maybe you know right now there is one issue out there that just really grinds your gears and it just really gets you. Well, maybe you need to go volunteer in an area where people are assisting those people so you can see truly what's going on. Have you done that? Are you having conversations with your spouse and with your family about putting others first? Are you saying to God, my finances are yours. Where do they need to go? What do they need to be doing? You see, really, being a gospel person, being a Christian, in its essence, is being pro-life. Being for the vulnerable. And newsflash to those out there listening to this that would say, that's exactly why I'm for abortion. I would say, you can be for the vulnerable, the mom that's facing the unplanned pregnancy, while also being for the unborn. You don't have to pick a side. And why is that? Because there's two heartbeats involved, not just one. And so we're unapologetically, boldly pro-life when it comes to the unborn. But there's other vulnerable demographics, other vulnerable groups in our society that we also have to be standing for and giving voice to. Being willing to have conversations with people that disagree with us. Again, not to be swayed, maybe in some cases be swayed, but not to water down the gospel, not to have not to question who we are as Christians, but instead to say, here's a different perspective. And I'm willing to listen to that perspective. I don't agree with it, but I'm willing to listen to it. And you may be hearing this and going, well, the other side would never do that. The pro-choicers will never sit down with me. All they want to do is shout me down. And trust me, I've been there. I spoke at an event on the steps of the Supreme Court. And all they did while I was speaking was yell and call me names and yell the entire time through megaphones. So, yeah, they're not going to go have coffee with me and hear what I believe on abortion and life. But again, if our rebuttal is, well, they're never going to sit down with us. They're never going to hear us out. I'm just going to be real with you right now. That's the rebuttal of my 7-year-old. Well, I would have treated her better, but she's mean to me. That's not who we are. That's not mature. That's not Christian. That doesn't mean there's times where I fail at that. There are certainly times where I fail at that, and I turn into a little kid, and I want to get angry, and I want to get back, and I want to do all of those things. But that is not who we should be. And so other practical ways is maybe you can volunteer at a pregnancy center. Now, if you're here in Knoxville, Hope Resource Center would welcome that. You can go through the training and see what avenue is best suited for you, whether that be mentoring our patients or helping out with class, maybe feeding our patients at class or helping out with baby showers. Maybe you're a carpenter and you're like, well, I don't know what I can do, but you know, my services are available if you ever need anything. Or there's plenty of areas to get involved. And so practical ways. Again, just do something. I think a lot of times people go, well, what difference can I possibly make? I'm just one person. I don't have a platform. I don't have a network. I don't have any pull. I don't have any influence. So what? Step out and say, but I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something more than vote, more than a bumper sticker, more than lip service. You know, if you look at the environment currently, the political environment across the country, you have people shouting at people and people trying to have breakfast and they're being attacked and yelled at and kicked out of restaurants and all these things, all because they work for or support a certain politician. But the truth of the matter is, those that would go to a restaurant and shout somebody down and get them kicked out, 9 times out of 10, and maybe 10 times out of 10, those are the folks that are doing nothing. Absolutely nothing. They're not volunteering at a soup kitchen. They're not volunteering in a pregnancy center. They're not volunteering anywhere. They're not donating money anywhere. They're not doing anything productive to help in the areas that they say need help. And so we, as Christians, need to be different. It isn't about going and finding someone that works at Planned Parenthood and shouting them down at a restaurant. That's crazy, and I would say that you are being anti-gospel when you do that, and I don't stand with you in that. But instead of putting your efforts in that, why not put your efforts in supporting and volunteering with organizations that are doing the work that line up with your values? That's how we make a difference. You know, I had a conversation today with some folks, and I said, when patients walk in our doors, they're not worried about whether I'm pro-life or pro-choice or who I voted for or which party I'm affiliated with. They're scared and they need help. That's where the differences are made. Policies can be enacted and put in place in Nashville, and they eventually make their way to our communities across the state. Policies can be put in place in Washington, and they'll eventually make their ways to us here in our state as well. But the day-to-day, everyday stuff that we need to be doing is right there for you. There are plenty of nonprofits, I guarantee you, in your vicinity that would welcome a phone call. They would welcome a prayer partner. They would welcome a financial partner. They would welcome someone that says, look, I want to volunteer. Here's the times that I have available. What can I do? Reach out. You'll be better for it. The kingdom will be better for it. Your heart will be better for it. We'll be back.
I searched the earth for something that could satisfy. Peace for the hurt I had buried deep inside. Knees on the floor, I finally found everything I needed. You lifted my soul and opened up my eyes.
So we've had a good conversation. At least I think I've had a good conversation with myself nonetheless. But I think we have a good conversation today on human dignity and a robust pro-life ethic. Again, just a couple things that I pointed out. A good article at USA Today by Daniel Darling. Look that up. Also, the book by Kevin DeYoung, Just Do Something, which is an amazing book and really changed my perspective on a lot of things. And so it's a quick read. Kevin DeYoung, amazing pastor, theologian, speaker, and author, and I would highly recommend that to you as well. As we finish up, I want to point you to a couple things that are coming up. If you are a runner, even if you're not a runner, you're just someone that walks, even if you don't walk, and you're just someone that doesn't like to do that, we still invite you to our Hope 5K that's coming up September 1st, going to be at Cherokee Boulevard. You can sign up online, investinghope.com, click on the Get Involved tab, and then scroll down to Events, and there it is. You can also find that on our, we post about it on our Facebook page as well. But 2018 Hope 5K, which is September 1st, it's going to be between 8 and 11 a.m. We're going to start registration really early as well. So hope to see you out there. Registration is continuing to build every single day, every single week. And so we would encourage you to be a part of that. Also, if you're out there and you're a business owner and you're thinking, I don't want to run, but I'd love to sponsor that event. You can email me at andrew@knoxvillehope.com. Would love to talk to you about that. You can also go to the website and see the different sponsorship levels. But if you don't want to do that, just shoot me an email, andrew@knoxvillehope.com, and I'd love to get you on the sponsorship list for our 5K. Also coming up, October 8th is our annual golf challenge. So our challenge golf tournament, this is coming up at Getty's View. And it's going to be an amazing day, October 8th. This year, we push it just a little bit to October. And Getty's View is an amazing course. If you've never played there, this is a great opportunity for you. You can learn all the details at our website, investinghope.com. Again, if you want to sponsor that, shoot me an email, andrew@knoxvillehope.com. We would love to see you out there. It's an amazing day of golf and fellowship. There's prizes and gifts and great breakfast from Chick-fil-A, lunch, all kinds of stuff going on, and we would love to see you out there on October 8th. And the prizes at both these events are going to be amazing. We have UT football tickets. We have UT basketball tickets. We have some Tennessee Titans football tickets. We also have some gift certificates and different things to different businesses and organizations around town here in Knoxville. So please be a part of that. Again, the thing that's coming up in just less than a month is the 5K Cherokee Boulevard. It's going to be a great time. Learn more, sign up at investinghope.com. And just come out and run with us or walk or just come and hang. You don't have to do either of those things. We would just love to have you out there and supporting the work at Hope Resource Center. Again, all the funds that we raise from anything that we do go to the work of Hope Resource Center and allows us to continue to serve those that come in our doors. And again, we do not charge a dime to any of our patients. And so we are grateful for your partnership that allows us to do that. So what I would say to end the show today is look in the mirror and be willing to say, I didn't love well today. Maybe we would say, I haven't loved well in the last few months. Maybe, you know, a lot of campaigns just ended. Maybe you look back at the campaign cycle and go, wow, I didn't love well through that at all. Well, today's the day to make that change. Love better today than you did yesterday. And seek to serve someone as you serve our God. We'll be back next week. Cause Lord.